This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world.
Welcome to Dreamland. It's just going to be me today. I'm going to be talking about disclosure, the dates, 2026 and 2027. Is it going to happen? I've just back from Europe. I went into a crop formation. I'm going to talk about that. I went to Rennes-le-Château in southern France. I'm going to talk about that. That's the Holy Blood, Holy Grail place. And I had a remarkable experience there, surprisingly enough, because you'd think, well, now it's a big tourist place, but it's not. It's still a quiet little French town. And I think you're going to find it fascinating what happened. But before we go into any of this, I want to talk a little bit about what happened in Texas and about, in general, the weather this spring around the world. I arrived in Europe on June the 9th to the worst heat wave. It was unbelievably hot. It was in the 90s in London the entire time, between 10 and 20 degrees above normal the whole time I was there, until 2 days before I left, in which case it became cool. But that has hopefully nothing to do with me. I was also in France, in Paris, and went to the south of France. I usually travel on the train in Europe, and this was no exception. The train from Paris to Carcassonne, which is near Rennes-le-Château, was delayed by hours. Why? Because the rails on the track were so hot that they would not hold the train. The train would have gone off the tracks. Remarkable. Very strange. And then there is the summer and spring of storms in the United States and fires. The present media is ignoring the fires in Canada, I suppose, because Canada is now the bad guy for some unknown reason. But they're there. There have been significant fires in Canada. Some fires in the United States. The day after I left southern France, fires broke out there. Fortunately, they were brought under control very quickly. But at one point, a friend there sent me a picture from his house of flames on the hills in the distance that looked horrifyingly like pictures that I would have taken from this house a few months ago when the Palisades fire reached the top of the Santa Monica Mountains, and at night we could see the flickering of flames the night before we were evacuated. My place was not damaged, by the way. But now, when you go up the Pacific Coast Highway to Malibu, which I do a lot because I've got friends in Malibu, of course, you go past mile after mile of ruins, burned out houses, skeletons, home skeletons and skeletons of shops, not actual people, thank God. Burned out cars. It's like a war zone. That gets me to Texas. I was appalled to see that my home area, which is the Texas Hill Country, took the hit that it did. Now, you can see all over the internet, oh, it's a flash flood area. It happens all the time. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't happen like this all the time at all. The structures at Camp Mystic, which is a place I've known about for, gosh, I think maybe all my life, but certainly it's always been there, were not damaged by any floods, not even the 1987 flood, which was pretty dramatic. This was off the scale. I went through what, oh gosh, in the 50s, we would get these sudden downpours and 4 or 5 floods came down the Guadalupe. Everybody knows about them. The reason is the riverbed is basically limestone. there's not very much soil there. And the water has no place to go except up, which is where it goes. And I could not believe my eyes when I saw the pictures. Of course, I have relatives, many relatives, living in the area or with homes in the area. And I immediately got in touch with everyone. I was still in Europe, and I felt extremely helpless. And I got in touch with everyone, and everyone was fine. And the houses, the homes, were all undamaged because our places are older. And in the old days, nobody built near a river. They knew those rivers. They built on bluffs and higher ground. And so our houses are all pretty much on high ground. Now, when I say high ground, the water came very close to a couple of these houses, which have never been threatened by flood in the 100+ years my family has been in the hill country. Yeah, we've been in the hill country a long time. I know the hill country like the back of my hand. When I saw those pictures on the television, I knew every town, I knew every street, I knew every bridge. It was deeply shocking. I also know some people who lost friends and relatives, of course, not in my family. And the worst part is that of children who lost childhood friends, it's so hard for a little 9-year-old to understand that. Now, you're going to read, and I'm sure you'll read statements in the replies to this video. Oh, it's a floodplain. It happens all the time. They should have been more careful. Well, yeah, there is one thing that went very wrong. When a violent volunteer fireman called the 911 number, the dispatcher in Kerrville, he was told the water was rising and they needed to send out an alert. He was told, we have to talk to our supervisor. When I heard that 911 call, my blood ran cold. It was 90 minutes before they finally got around to sending out the alert, and it was way too late. It was almost too late when the fireman called in. What is going on here? Trump is supposedly cutting through all the bureaucracy, but they're not cutting through the bureaucracy that matters, which is the little people down on their officious little desks making rules up that they shouldn't make up. No one with a call like that coming in should have to get approval from a supervisor. They should be able to deal with it right away. Those 90 minutes cost many lives. I don't hold the person responsible who said that, but it's tempting to do so. I have to tell you, I just don't know what to think sometimes of the way this world is going. It's not in a good direction. You know, I remember when Art Bell and I wrote Superstorm and published it, we were criticized from all directions. The right wing was saying it'll never happen. It's not like that. The book's completely nonsense. The left wing was saying, it'll never happen. It's not like that. The book's completely nonsense. They were all saying it for different reasons. The left wing in those days was committed to slow climate change, slow, gradual climate change. We could control it. We had time. The right wing was committed to no climate change. It's not happening. In fact, that's the stance of the present administration. When the place is burning down, being flooded out, storms everywhere, and getting worse, it's the wrong time to decide it's not happening, I have to say. So, anyway, we were soundly criticized. There was a chance that the book could have become a major bestseller when we went on the Today Show, but instead we were trashed by Matt Lauer, who was not interested in the book's sense, he was interested in the fact that it was Whitley Strieber and Art Bell, two people he regarded foolishly as professional liars. And that's why he dumped on our book, and why he hurt us so badly on the Today Show. Art talked about that for years, until the day he died. And I don't blame him, because Art was a good guy. Art wanted people's lives to be good. And he knew that book would help. And then Roland Emmerich came along with his movie, which was effective in many ways, but it concentrates the events into a very, very short period of time. But that's not entirely wrong, and this is where I'm going with this. And we're going to go down other paths during the course of our time together today. But that's not entirely wrong. The record shows that there have been numerous incidents of very sudden climate change on planet Earth. Now, I think that most of these incidents have to do with things that are now invisible, such as large bolides hitting the Earth that we don't know about and left no obvious record. In the Fourth Mind, I talk about the beginning of a period called the Younger Dryas that began about 12,000 years ago and stripped North America clean. Stripped it clean. Can you imagine what happened? What happened was something, probably a cometary mass of ice, hit the Laurentide Glacier, which was at that point all the way south into the Midwest. It hit the glacier, and it sent a massive splash of ice up across all the way to the Carolinas. And when you go into the Carolinas now, you find something called the Carolina Dells, which are over a million little craters, some of them not so little, that they've been studied extensively, and there's no sign of there any kind of meteor. The reason is it wasn't a meteor that hit. It was ice. There's a terrific book about this called The Cycle of Cosmic Catastrophes. It was mostly trashed by the geologic community because it was written by NASA scientists, not geologists. But, you know, one of the things that the whole scientific and academic community has got to put behind them, and we're going to talk about this a little bit again later, is this business of warfare between them, and also the destruction of careers when people are wrong. This is a very bad idea. You don't get the chance to take chances in the intellectual community of the Western world now. You can't do it. You have to be a Nobel Prize winner or someone like Jeff Kripal, who's got a secure place at Rice University and is enormously respected. He can go out on a limb, but most people can't. They don't dare go out on a limb, or they could get their careers ruined, especially if the limb they go out on breaks off. That happened during the Clovis period, when the conventional wisdom was that the first people in the Americas were the Clovis people, and they arrived from the north. Careers were ruined. People who said this, there was evidence of something else happening, were ruined. Their careers were destroyed. They were drummed out of the community, and they lost their grants and they lost their jobs. Now it turns out they were right. And the very people who destroyed their careers are now on their side. But where are they? I don't see them around anymore. So we've got to do better than this. We have to be more open and flexible at every level. The intellectual community, the scientific community, the left wing, the right wing. We've got to somehow come together, because we're losing our planet. Pure and simple. We are losing our planet. And, you know, anyone who puts in this, the chat on this on YouTube and says the Texas floods have happened before, I'm tempted to ban you from my YouTube channel. The reason is, as I said, I have been through this a number of times. My first memories of the Texas Hill Country are back in the 40s, late 40s and early 50s, when we didn't even have electricity in our house. That's there. It's still, this beautiful house is now beautifully electrified, of course, but in those days, we used carbide gas. And, of course, as a little boy, I was absolutely fascinated by this. But that's how far back I go. Let me tell you a story from my childhood about, I wish this was a funny story. I'll tell plenty of funny stories. I might even tell one at the end of the show. I'm not sure. Let's see how long we go. Anyway, this is not a funny story. It's a flood story, a flash flood story. Our house is on a bluff. And you go down about a 70-foot bluff to get to the river, and then another 20 or 30 feet down into the riverbed to go to our swimming hole, which has been there since my great-grandmother built the house all those years ago in the early 20th century. Anyway, we were down there playing, myself, my sister, two of her friends, and a friend of mine. I was probably about 10 when this happened, I would guess, because I remember it very clearly. If I'd been much younger, maybe I wouldn't remember it so clearly. Anyway, at the house, there's a bell, a big old bell that you can ring. It's an old mission bell or something that my great-grandmother found. It's been hanging there on that tree for over 100 years. And you can hear it pretty much over a lot of the property, and you can hear it clearly down at the river. And normally, when we were playing down at the river, Mother would ring the bell when it was lunchtime, and we would come up. We hadn't been down there very long, and understand, this is a bright, sunny day. There's no sign of any problem. I'll get to what I'm talking about and why that is in a minute. Suddenly, the bell starts ringing. And we didn't have any watches on or anything, but I figured it was, you know, we'd only been down there a short time, and we didn't want to go back. But that bell, ding, 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 she was ringing it fast, and it was obvious something was wrong. So we got out of there, and as we were climbing the bank up from the river, a flash flood came roaring down the Guadalupe River, full of trees and bits and pieces of barns and dead cattle and dead chickens, about a 3-foot high wave front. Now, you say, oh, only 3 feet? You try standing up to 3 feet of water that's full of debris and moving really fast. We would have been killed instantly in that flood. Now, why did she know about it? It was a nice day where we were, but further up the river, there was a big thunderstorm going on, a big downpour. And I vaguely remember hearing distant thunder, and we may have. Anyway, we got safely up to the house. The flood went through, and life returned to normal there. So later, we were back down at the river again. But in those days, people were not, they were not detached from nature. And what had happened is a friend of Mother's had called from the river to say there's a big storm here, and if you've got any of your kids are on the river, you better get them back up to the house right away. In other words, there was a neighbor alarm system in those days. And there is too now. I mean, this is not a bad area. It's a lovely area, and a lot of good people live there. People helped each other tremendously in this flood as best they could, but it was just beyond the pale. Looking at those trees and looking at places like Center Point and Ingram, some of those buildings have been there all my life, and they're ruined now completely. And the great cypresses along the river, trees that have stood there for easily 100 years and probably more, are smashed to kindling. Whoa. This is not normal. This is no ordinary Guadalupe Hill Country flood. It's the worst one, I think, that's ever happened up there, maybe since the damned Ice Age, for all I know. 12,000 years ago, this is what happened. Something hit that glacier and caused it to break up. At the same time, tiny meteors hit all over the Americas. All of the outdoor animals, the mammoths, the ground sloths, the mastodons, vast numbers of them were killed instantly. And when you do research on them, you find embedded in their bones little bits of metal. And these were these tiny meteors that sprayed in with the comet and also set the continent on fire. North America was set on fire. A fire that consumed the entire continent east of the Rockies for the most part. And now you would think, oh, that's Whitley Strieber and Art Bell talk, right? I'm sorry, no. This is one thing that even conventional geology has to face, as much as they have emotional problems with facing the fact that great climate catastrophes do happen on planet Earth. The reason is there's something called the black mat, which is present over large parts of the North American continent. What is it? It's a mat that's sometimes near the surface, sometimes deeper, sometimes a few inches deep, sometimes many feet deep. And it consists of two things, charcoal and the skeletons of algae. Here's what happened. This incoming catastrophe, the debris from a supernova, although it caused memories in humankind of a war in heaven, very understandably, this material set this fire, a huge fire. The whole continent burned, which was largely forested except under right close to the glacier where it was tundra. And can you imagine some place like Des Moines in tundra, or Kansas City in a huge virgin forest? Different world. Not so long ago, though. In fact, it's so recent that you can find the dung of giant ground sloths in caves around the Grand Canyon still to this day. It's that recent geologically. 10,000 years, 12,000 years is nothing geologically. Anyway, this fire burned for years, during which time the glacier became more and more unstable, finally melting, and after about 1,000 years, think of that, water came and put the fires out. During that time, we had a period called the Younger Dryas. Why is it called that? Because a plant that grows in the north called the Dryas moved south during this period, meaning we know it was got much colder. And it got colder because there was so much smoke from this massive fire that the skies for years and years were filled with smoke and there was hardly any light. Of course, that meant that whatever existed, and I go into this deeply in The Fourth Mind, whatever existed then in terms of human stuff was destroyed. And that's why you find, for example, Baalbek in Lebanon, and this is true of a number of other sites as well, it's suddenly abandoned. They were in the middle of cutting one of the largest stones they had cut, when suddenly they stopped. That's how sudden it was. They were affected too, all of them, because that's when this was done. It was not done by the Romans, not done by the Greeks, not done by the Egyptians. It was done by our real civilization, which was killed all those thousands of years ago by this disaster. That's the truth of it. That's the truth. Now, why am I talking about all of this? I started with the fact that the day after tomorrow compressed the timeline of Superstorm a little bit. Not a lot, a little bit is all. And it's a warning. Things could change very rapidly here, dramatically and permanently. Permanently. Climate change is not gradual. It's never gradual. It goes along slowly changing and then suddenly flips, like a rubber band being tightened and then suddenly popping. And that's happening now. I think we're in the beginning part of a major flip in climate. I think we certainly are. And we're going to have to figure out ways to get through this as human beings. Because I have grandchildren. A lot of you have children and grandchildren. My friends have children. I've got a friend in England who I just saw, and they have a wonderful little daughter. She's granddaughter and niece and daughter. She's just passed 1 year old, and I wish I could show, but I can't, because you can't show a child, obviously. Her singing and dancing and so alive. And, you know, you're thinking probably about the kids in your life, of how wonderful they are, because they're all like that. Kids are wonderful. So are you. That's why I'm talking to you. I love you very much. I've gone through hell in my life. I've been beaten up so many times. I've got so much scar tissue on my soul. I can't even feel the pain of it anymore. And I don't care, because I'm here to help people. That's what I live for. I live for those children. I talk here for those children. I get beat up for those children. I get ignored. I get shadow banned on YouTube for those children. For example, speaking of shadow banning, and this is a bit of a segue, it won't last long. You know, you can get captions on these shows. All you have to do is push a button and they come. We can't. We sometimes, the captioning ability is present, and sometimes it's not, but it never works for us. Why? Because somewhere in the deep darkness of this world, someone wants to be sure that we don't reach all that many people. The problem is, people hate the truth. The truth makes you free, and they're afraid to be free. They're afraid to face reality. And reality is going to catch up with them. It's going to catch up with every single person who is denying climate change. It'll catch up with them in the next few years. A couple of years ago, I got the impression from the visitors, and sometimes I say they told me, and if Annie was still alive, she'd say, Whitley, did they tell you, or did this come into your head? And the answer is, this came into my head. That in 7 years, we had about 7 years left. And you'll find me various places saying the visitors told me. And I'm trying to be as accurate as I can and truthful as I can. Maybe they did tell me, but it feels like it came into my head. And it's not something I dreamed up, though. That was 2 years ago. Now we've got 5 years left. So the next 4 years are going to be very chaotic in terms of climate on the whole planet, not just in the United States, but over the whole planet. I think Europe is terribly vulnerable to extreme weather conditions. Every time it gets too hot, like it is there now, that opens the door to possible extraordinary flooding happening. I think that England could be face to face with massive floods in the fall. I hope not, but I think it's possible. And I think that very violent floods could happen in Central Europe as well. And so we have to just face this. We're here. We are on spaceship Earth. And obviously, there is no cavalry to come to our rescue, because otherwise they would have done that, would they not? Okay, now that gets me to the next part of this thing. And I am going to put in a break here so that we can put in some ads for those of you who are on the free side of the show. And those of you who are not on the free side of the show will see a little blip, and that's all.
The Fourth Mind, Whitley Strieber's explosive new book. The first time alien anatomy, alien genetics, the alien brain, and the alien mind have ever been detailed publicly. Learn how they think. Learn what they believe. Learn what we mean to them. Learn when they are coming and why. Then, in part two, learn why we don't have powers like telepathy, levitation, and healing that they do have. Find out about the catastrophe that took our powers from us. Find out how we can regain them. The Fourth Mind. Totally new. Incredibly important. Get your copy today on Amazon. Available as a Kindle, hardcover, softcover, and an audiobook read by Whitley Strieber.
Where is the unknown country? Is it out there? In the stars? Or is it also somewhere else? Is it in us? In you? Unknown country, join us today. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and join us. Join the questions. Join the search. Join the adventure. Unknowncountry.com. There's no place like it in the world.
Those will probably be the only ads I remember. Typical of me. I'm supposed to be making money here, and I'm not really very good at that, and I usually don't have enough money. But I don't care. I don't care. You know, you wonder about these multi-billionaires. Why? Why? What is it, a hobby or an addiction or something? If they're making billions and billions of dollars and they want more and more and more, and they have nothing to give away? Come on. If that kind of money comes your way, you have an obligation to mankind. That some people recognize it. Bill Gates and Melinda Gates recognize it and were vilified for giving their money away. What? Charity? A lot of people in the Christian right community vilify them because they gave their money away. I seem to remember Jesus saying some things about that. They may have, maybe ought to really look at his teachings again. Anyway, we are at some kind of an edge, and we feel it. We instinctively feel it. Chris Bledsoe, who I love, he's a great guy. I know him not very well, but well enough to know that there's someone good in there, has said that when the star Regal lines up with the Sphinx, which is Easter Sunday of 2026, there's going to be something big happening on planet Earth. And there's this sort of the implication, I've talked to him about this, and he says it's not exactly the second coming, he doesn't really know what it is, but he's been more specific on various podcasts. Now, so that's 2026. John Ramirez, the CIA officer who interviewed with me once on Dreamland years ago, then told me he couldn't do any more interviews, and now interviews with everyone as long as it's not me, apparently. I'm going to ask him to interview with me again and see what he says. Anyway, he's claiming that there's going to be enormous change in 2027. And they're coming, and we better be ready for them. What I heard was that when we have all realized that planet Earth is not going to be able to support any large number of human beings anymore, and everyone on the planet knows this, then they will come. And that worried me when I heard that. And it sounds like 2027, 2026, this might be, things might unfold much more quickly than it now seems they will. That they would not want to show up until we were aware of the fact that we were in deep trouble and helpless. That means to me that they're going to want things and want to do things that we don't like. But who are they? Isn't that an interesting question? There's conflict among them. And that's the case. It is real. This conflict is because of the fact that, well, take a look back in 2002, the Crabwood UFO formation. The Crabwood formation came up in, I believe, April of 2002 in a little town in England. And the formation was unique. It was a face of a gray, and beside it, a disc that had what was immediately recognized by me and other people as code on it, ASCII code. In fact, it was, I didn't recognize it as ASCII, but others did, and it was easily interpretable. It says, "Beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises. There is good out there. Much pain, but still time. It doesn't guarantee that good will win." Notice that. But who are the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises? Well, I don't know, but I can guess that something about the metals and things that we got and the bodies and all of that, that we got from Roswell and other incidents over the years, those are the false gifts. And the broken promises, I suspect, have to do with the abductions. I think that we will eventually, if we ever do, find out a truth, and that is that there was a kind of trade made at some time in the 50s that these beings, or whatever they are, could examine a few human beings and learn about them and learn about their DNA. And then it turned out that that opened the door to a massive worldwide encounter known as the abduction experience. And if ever there's any reason you can think of the government wanting to hide this, you can see that would be a big reason for it. They wouldn't want anyone to know the extent of the mistake they made. Now, so did it happen that way? Is that what is going on? Is that the reason for the secrecy? I don't know, but we'll find out one way or another, won't we, in the next few years. If 2026 and 2027 come and go and nothing happens, there's one thing I want you to remember. People like Chris Bledsoe are trying hard. He has got an extraordinary career of calling in orbs, of seeing orbs, of healing people. He is a good man, I think. And I hope that doesn't prove, I'm not proved wrong, but I do think so. And if his prediction misses the mark, just bear in mind that most predictions do, and he tried hard, and he'll keep trying hard for all of us. And John Ramirez the same. John is a good man. John's out there doing the impossible, just like me, just like Chris, just like all of us who are on the front lines of this thing. We got to stick together, God knows. These people need to be respected, even if we get to 2028 and nothing has happened. Except the planet has gotten worse, which is going to happen. I don't need to be a prophet to assure you that that will be the case. It will be. Okay, so those are the things that are expected. 2026, 2027. Will either something will happen, big will happen, or not. Now, let's go back to Europe. Let's have some fun. When I was in England, I didn't really plan this, but a friend said, would you like to go to Avebury? And there's a crop circle down there we could go in. And I thought, what fun. Of course I would. So off we went to Avebury. Avebury is one of my favorite places in the world. I've been going there for years. I used to go to Stonehenge when I was young, but, and I'm not a snob or anything, but what they've done to it, made it into a tourist attraction. It just, I can't really in a way bear it anymore, because when I was young, back in the 60s in England, you'd take a bus out from Salisbury, and it had a stop at Stonehenge, which was a voluntary stop. You had to ring, and when the bus came back, you had to raise your hand to indicate that you wanted the bus to stop. But it was there. And I went out from Salisbury with Anne actually once also, to Stonehenge. And you got off the bus and you just walked up to it. There were no fences. There was no officials. There was no rules. There was no, it wasn't a museum or a World Heritage Site or anything like that. And I'm telling you, it was alive. It was a living being. It was absolutely amazing. The life you felt there, the silent, deeply sacred life. You couldn't miss it. You know, it took probably 500 years to build Stonehenge. You know how many people lived in England when it was built? About 30,000. The whole British Isles, not just England. That meant that essentially everyone worked on it at one time or another in their life for generations. Generations. Amazing. Amazing. That human mind doesn't exist anymore. That we don't think like that anymore. We don't have that deep, grounded, rooted relationship with the planet and what we call and believe is sacred. But they did. They were willing to do that generation after generation. And how they even moved the stones, how they did it, is another question entirely. I don't think it was done by what we think of as magic, which is what I do think, that places like Nan Madol and Baalbek were done. Because, well, like, for example, at Baalbek, these huge stones, the quarry is right there. You can see the platform from the quarry. It's not far. But what there isn't present is any foundational material showing that the path from the quarry to the platform was built up enough to where the stones could be moved across it without sinking into the ground. 100-ton stone is a very unforgiving thing to move. I go into this in The Fourth Mind, and I go into Ed Leedskalnin and the Coral Castle in Florida, which is a wonderfully strange place if you ever want to go there, which he built. Apparently, he said he had ancient Egyptian magic, and he built it using the same methods, apparently, that were used at Baalbek, at Sacsahuaman, at Nan Madol, and other places like that in the world. A lost science of some kind that has to do with using the energies of the earth itself and being at, I guess it's the best way to say, is to be at peace with the planet, in such a way that you and the planet are inseparable friends. We're not like that anymore. We are not part of the planet anymore. We are on the planet. We're broken. We're severed from the earth. All right. So, went down to Avebury, which is still, in my opinion, in my feeling, just as magical as it ever was. This tree I'm going to show you is one of the trees at Avebury. I love these trees. I sit under these trees. This is my tree. This is my favorite one of them. There's two or three of them. So we walked the stones and in the heat and had a wonderful time. Later, we went up on Golden Ball Hill, where many orbs are seen. We didn't see any orbs, but, you know, now that I'm an 80-year-old guy, I thought to myself, traipsing up Golden Ball Hill for more than a quarter of a mile uphill in what was probably 90-degree heat, or 80 to 85-degree heat anyway. You know, you're doing okay, Woody. You can do this, and I could do it easily. So anyway, we got up on Golden Ball Hill and sat there, and there's beautiful pictures, as you can see. Beautiful place. The sun slowly set. The English sunsets and English evenings in the summertime are so special because it's so far north, and the sun sets very, very slowly, and evening gradually gathers. And it's not until about 11 o'clock at night, at least at that point in the summer, that it was really fully dark. And we went down before that because it was also got cold. And I thought to myself, this is desert weather. This weather is up from the Sahara. That's why it's like this. Hot and dry during the day. And the sun leaves and it becomes extremely cold. Went down into the 50s from the 90s. As I say, that's very dangerous. I think the UK could have very serious water problems combined with extraordinary floods and more droughts and excessive heat. I think all of Europe is vulnerable. I think the Central United States is very vulnerable. I think that Canada is very vulnerable to fires and to drought and to sudden intense weather. In fact, there's hardly a continent I can think of that isn't vulnerable in one way or another. Anyway, we also went into a crop formation. Now, when they first appeared, there was a massive effort to debunk them. Drunks with boards on their feet. The CIA apparently was involved, but it's a little shadowy there. I'm not absolutely certain of this. But of course, the usual suspects, the left-wing media, and, you know, I'm pretty moderate. I'm not a left-winger or a right-winger. I have to just be very upfront about that. But I don't like intellectual arrogance. And that is the far left and the far right are both afflicted with intellectual arrogance. They think they know it all. They think their way is it's their way or the highway. My dad used to say, Whitley, political extremes always bring bloodshed of one kind or another. Dad was very wise in many ways. He's, a good man. And that is so true. I think we're very vulnerable right now because I think that the climate disruptions are going to be more intense than the Trump administration can possibly imagine, and that they're not going to be prepared for it. In fact, they're going to be doing everything they can to dismantle what we do have to help us as a community get through extraordinary tragedies, disasters. So we went up down into the crop circle, and it was out, way out on a farm. It was nowhere near the road. And we drove down into the farm and then walked a couple miles, again through the blistering heat of the day, into the formation. Now, why do I know crop formations that the usual suspects, as I said, NPR, the New York Times, the Guardian, all of those papers, who laughed and snickered at it. The BBC, to its credit, tried to do something more with it, and that was good. I mean, they weren't totally laughing at it, but mostly people were. And I remember when the Boards on the Feet story came along, you could hear that awful laughter in the NPR reporters' voices. They can do laughter without laughing. I don't know whether they're trained to do it or not, but you can hear the chuckle in their voices as they told this hilarious story about these two guys with boards on their feet who had accomplished miracles. Among the first crop circles are the fractals that appeared near Stonehenge. Now, come on. That wasn't done by guys with boards on their feet. Now, I want to show you something, and those of you who are listening, I'll describe it. What I'm showing is this is inside the formation. Now you're seeing a broken stem. That's wheat, by the way, what we call wheat, and the British call corn. And that's an ordinary broken stem. Could have been broken by me walking through, someone else walking through, because people were walking, had walked into the circle, definitely, into the formation. But now look at this one. It looks different. Notice it's sort of bulging. That's a blown node. What does that? Something applied intense heat very briefly to that node to make it bend, to make it blow and bend. Such heat requires, as far as we know, things like microwaves to do it. And microwaves, we don't have anything that can do that with microwaves. I've heard it said, oh, this is all done by satellites from above. Well, I'm sorry, that's physically impossible. The reason is that atmospheric diffraction is going to make any beam of microwaves from a satellite so diffuse that it's not going to be effective when it reaches the ground. And no one, not even the visitors, are going to be able to change that. They may have different methods of beaming things from above. Probably do. But I think that the Oliver's Castle video is probably real. And that's probably how crop formations are made. One of the people I was with, by the way, is this very sort of down-to-earth, miraculous person, is the way I would put it. Who once was camping out and called in an orb. And then the next morning in the field below their campsite, there was a crop formation. Not many people can do that. I wonder, Chris Bledsoe should go over there and try sometime and see if he can do it. If anyone can, he can. Anyway, this person wasn't able to do it just once in their life so far. So then again, I don't think they've tried all that. They're very casual about the kind of thing, which I think is appealing. I think people who make a big deal of themselves because they have unusual stuff about them is, you know, it's an ego trip. By the way, speaking of unusual stuff about people, I'm going to do two shows, one with Greg Bishop about a friend of both of ours, Mac Tonney's. And why are we doing this? He wrote a book called The Crypto-Terrestrials. And this is going to be one of the most unusual, extraordinary shows you have ever seen. It'll be up. We'll do it in a few weeks. We've already got it planned. And you'll see why. And I'm tempting you to... I'm teasing the show. The next show I'm teasing is going to be done with a dear friend, Mark Sims, who's just got a book out. And we're going to talk about a little bit about that. It's not a book by him, but it's a book that he thinks is very important. And we'll tell you why. But in this show, you're going to see the most unusual damn thing happen to me that I've never seen anything like it. None of the video people who we've showed the tape to can figure it out either. And I think you'll be fascinated by it. It is really strange. So those two shows are coming up. There's lots of good stuff coming up, as always, on Dreamland. And by the way, don't be ashamed to tell your friends about Dreamland. Don't be afraid to tell your friends about Whitley Strieber and that you like my work. Because one of the things that happens to me is it's not intentional shadow banning, it's unintentional shadow banning, where people, they don't want to say they like this stuff because they're embarrassed. Whitley Strieber, the rectal probe man, hearty har. That's over. It's done. No one's in that space much anymore. So you can safely tell your friends how terrific Dreamland is. And it is terrific. At least I think so. And I've been doing it now since 1998, and I have not had a dull week in all that time. Incidentally, the show I put up last week with Jim Mars, I love Jim, but it's a little outmoded politically, and I didn't realize that when I put it up. Still, it's fun to listen to Jim's voice, and the conspiracies that he talks about are still real. They haven't changed a bit. Some of the politics in the show is, as I say, it's outmoded, but we're gonna be doing more blasts from the past because Dreamland is an absolute treasure trove of extraordinary programming. And in fact, you know, one thing people don't realize, that Unknown Country has every single news story we have ever published is still available on the site. And one of the things I want to do is I want to get an AI system in with a much more powerful search capability that will enable you to query it, the Unknown Country, like you would query ChatGPT, and get information from the site, because there's nothing like it in the world. It's as simple as that. Nothing like it in the world. You've seen the blown nodes. Now here's the crop circle itself. It's a beautiful formation, as you see. I do not know what these formations mean. The one of the few that ever made sense on our level was the Crabwood formation. And it's obvious that it's about conflict, because there's good out there and there are the bearers of false gifts. I don't know whether that means the grays are the bearers of false gifts and the good is someone we don't see, or the grays are the good and the bearers of false gifts are someone we don't see. The formation isn't clear about that. Anyway, I'm on the side of the good. I'm not interested in anti-gravity machines and stuff anymore. Not having, as a child, nearly burned down my house trying to make one. God, I'm surprised I'm still alive. My dad managed to make it through my childhood. He almost didn't. Well, I'm going to conclude the show now. Something very odd happened. Let me show you a clip of what started to go on when I began to try to talk about the visit to Rennes-le-Château in southern France. Obviously, the lighting has changed. There was nothing noticeable in the studio itself. The light seemed completely normal, but it has encouraged me to do a longer show about the visit to Rennes-le-Château and perhaps bring in some experts to talk about it as well, because it's a beautiful show and potentially, and what happened to me there is quite interesting, but I think I need to do it more justice than just in the last 5 or 10 minutes of this show. And maybe that's what the strange lights are telling me. So I'd like to thank you as always for coming to Dreamland. Remember that the Fourth Mind Communion and the original edition of The Key are now all available in the unknowncountry.com store as signed books. Don't fail to get them. And if you're not a subscriber, think about joining us. It's a lot of fun and a great adventure to be part of the unknowncountry.com community. Thank you very much for watching Dreamland and listening to Dreamland.
Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of unknowncountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.